Iraq, Afghanistan, and Canada with the urgency he applies to events in Ferguson. Above all, Mumia's writings brim with hope and humanism and are filled with love. Immediately after his transfer to the general population, Mumia wrote a letter to the men and women he was leaving behind on death row. Quote, "I write to tell you all, even those I've never met, that I love you, for we have shared something exceedingly rare. I have shared tears and laughter with you that the world will neither know nor see. But brothers and sisters of the row, I write not of death, but of life. Love fiercely. Learn a new thing. Keep your mind alive. Keep your heart alive. Laugh. No matter what the world says of you, see the best in each other and radiate love to each other." Unquote.
Listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM and KBOO.FM online.
Hello, my friends. This is Life During Wartime.
Tune in to KBOO on Wednesday, March 17th at 10 p.m. for Life During Wartime.
Not just a regular Life During Wartime, playing punk and hardcore, having live bands, and letting you know all the underground DIY punk happenings going on in the Portland metro area.
Just because we're different, they have a spaz attack.
This is a celebration marathon. It's from 10 p.m. to 5:30 a.m. It's our 26th year on the air, so we're having a 25th anniversary celebration.
Looking back at the DJs and bands
this is Life During Wartime
that have made Life During Wartime a punk institution in Portland, at KBOO, and on the World Wide Web.
Celebrate 25 years of Life During Wartime by donating during our anniversary marathon celebration.
On Wednesday, March 17th, from 10 p.m. to 5:30 a.m.
Here on your community radio station.
KBOO Portland.
KBOO is hiring a membership director. Our membership director maintains relationships with KBOO members and listeners, create a process to meet or exceed fundraising goals, and manage the membership database. For a complete job description and instructions on how to apply, visit kboo.fm/employment. Apply by March 15th. KBOO is an affirmative action and equal opportunity employer.
Welcome to Art Talk Bus Stop, a monthly youth-centered podcast about how artists do their work and make a living. I'm Nicole Cabrera.
And I'm Erica Thomas. Today we're joined by Marty Clements. Marty is an archives technician at Portland State University's Special Collections and University Archives located in the Miller Library, and previously worked as the archives technician for KBOO Radio. They are interested in using archives as a place for queer activism. Welcome, Marty.
Hello, thank you for having me.
So starting off with your art archive at PSU, where did the idea come from, and how did it come to you, and who helped you create it?
Are you referring to the Art and Social Practice Archive?
Yes. Yeah.
So I am not the creator. The original idea came from the Art and Social Practice program. Harold Fletcher, Shoshana Guggenheim, Lo Moran, and Rajni Thakur, who I think was previously on your program. And they brought in this idea to host the first public archive of art and social practice ephemera. And I don't think it exists anywhere else in the world. And they brought it into the head university archives, Chris Passchild, to try to, see if they could hold the collection at the university library. And Chris was very gung-ho about it. As most archivists are when new collections come in or there's an idea brought in. And so they brought that in probably 2017. And then I started working on the collection in like middle of summer 2018.
So what did you study to become an archivist? Was it a clear path or was there leniency to what you're able to study?
Yeah, so I have a bachelor's in history, and most archivists go through the master's in library information sciences program with an archives specific degree. I just kind of did my undergrad at Portland State and really became invested in archives and history, and I got the opportunity to work on a collection, which is now known as the Rutherford Family Collection, and it's a collection about prominent African-American civil rights family in Portland. And so I was just like immersed in it and just knew that that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to become an archivist. And I started volunteering at like the Oregon Historical Society. I got temp jobs at the Portland City Archives and worked at KBOO for a couple years with their archives. And so I just kind of, I learned from archivists throughout the city and just kind of did a hands-on approach. Yeah.
Did you always know that you wanted to become an archivist, or was this something that you kind of found out about once you started going to school?
It's a really good question. I think I did. As a child, I was just really immersed in history. I think that had to do with my dad, kind of like showing me documentaries. He showed me this documentary called Eyes on the Prize when I was a child, and it's about the civil rights movement. And I was engrossed in the story, but I was just really into, well, where did the materials for the documentary come from? Where did the pictures come from? You know, all like the handwritten notes that they would show on the screen. And I just wanted to know like where that originated, who housed them, who got to see them, who got to use them. And so when I did my bachelor's of history, it just kind of made sense that, because a lot of historians use archives in their daily practice, and it just made sense to me to try to go that way instead.
Now moving on to kind of the work you do, what does your daily sort of work day look like? Do you think it is sort of like the average archivist, or do you even think there's a such thing as a normal archivist?
Yeah, I mean, there is a lot of like preconceived notions about what an archivist does. Like it's, you know, they're in a dark room in a basement, just like hoarding all these these documents, but it's not like that at all. It does change and differ day to day. Like I have been, you know, I could process a collection and think that I could be doing that for a week, but if a question comes up from a patron asking about materials, I'm gonna put them forefront and help them, you know, with access to what they're looking for. I know what I'm saying is a little vague, but it does differ. But every day it is working with historical documents and collections, and making sure that those collections do get to be accessed by the public. That's my main goal, is to make sure that the materials get to be in the hands of those who need it.
Does that mean that part of your job is answering specific requests and questions that come in from people who are searching for specific histories, stories, images, and that some of your work is building the archive?
Yeah. Each day we get requests or emails from patrons, researchers, students. If it's a student who's working on their, you know, master's thesis, or students looking for more information on a certain building, we get those types of emails. We get emails regarding Portland State history, Portland community history, and it varies every day. And then my job is to not not so much create the collection, because the collections are what we call original order. It's already, when it comes to us, it's in the order that someone created it. But it's my job to make sure that that kind of makes sense as I'm putting it back out there to the public. So I will take these documents and put them in archive grade material folders and boxes, and create a finding aid. It's called a finding aid, which is just like, it's kind of like a reference sheet that people refer to find what they're looking for. The word that I'm really thinking about lately as I'm talking about this is responsibility. It feels like a huge responsibility to take care of these items that have been in maybe someone's basement for 50 years, or you know, just collected, and somebody took care of this stuff because they wanted it to remain. And so yeah, it's my job to make sure that the materials are preserved. And that's when we use, you know, archive grade materials to house them and store them.
Mm-hmm. Being that your job is relatively new, do you have any pieces that are older, or is most of the work that you have fairly recent? And what would be the oldest piece that you have?
Oh, that's a good question. So with Special Collections and University Archives, we do have a rare book collection. That is not my specialty, but I will do my best. One specific book that we just received is the Malleus Maleficarum, and that's from 1490. It's a second edition.
Sorry. I'm sorry. Yes. I'm having a small panic over here because I'm extremely excited to learn about this.
It's great. I love it.
Do you want to just say for the listenership what that is so that we can...
Yes. I'm loving the enthusiasm. That's what we want. So that translates as the Hammer of the Witches, and what it is it was a text used by the Inquisition to identify and prosecute people suspected of witchcraft. And it's intense. I mean, it's not the oldest item we have, but it's like thick, and it comes in the thick cover with a lock. My colleague Carolee Harrison has really worked specifically with that piece during COVID. She created a YouTube video, I think it's online, like a page flipper. And I know that a bunch of history majors, they recently have dissected the book, like in ways that, you know, that's what our job is. Like, we house it, but it's up to the public, the students, the researchers to take it and create stories and, you know, discover things that we don't do. So it's a fascinating piece. I highly recommend, when COVID's over, to come in and check it out. Yes, it's a cool piece. But most of our collections, you know, they range throughout time. I mean, I'm working with something right now from KPSU Radio, and that's from the inception to current. So it's all over the time period.
Cool. So the KPSU radio station, that's the PSU radio station.
Yes. Yeah.
And you're talking about ephemera from the radio station, is that right?
It's everything. So it's broadcast lists, it's t-shirts, it's how they promoted themselves. So that's like pencils and stickers, matchboxes. But it's also like the day-to-day grind, finances, admin notes, you know, how are we gonna keep KPSU running, basically, yeah.
You talked about how we should come in once COVID is over. what would that look like? What does the archive look like once it's actually open to the public?
Excellent. I love this. This is probably the reason why I love being an archivist, because I just love interacting with the public. So the patron would come in, We are open by appointment only. Not all archives are like that. But you would come in, we would welcome you in, we would sit you at the reading room table, we would have you sign out a sheet of your name and contact information and why you're there. And that just, you know, that gives us an idea of what collections are used most. And I would go into our archive space and pull out the boxes or folders that you requested, and I would tell you not to have any food or drink near the collections. And yeah, you know, I would just lay it out. And, you know, if you wanted to talk about the collection or the ideas you have, we could go back and forth on that, or I could just let you browse and, you know, I'm just right around the corner if you do have questions. But this is the point of my job, because, you know, I just see so many people come in with questions or ideas, and then they walk out with five more questions and ideas, and it just grows. And certain items that I don't necessarily think would be interesting you know, people just grab onto it. Like, it's just, it makes this personal connection with people when they come in and they're just like, I had no idea, I'm going to come back next week. And that's, that excitement and curiosity is something that I'm really into.
What's one of the weirdest things that somebody has gotten excited about?
Well, I wouldn't say it was weird. I guess, his name is Jay Ponteri. He came in asking to view the Rutherford collection, working specifically with Verdell, who was the matron of the family. And he really was gravitated towards her daily journal books. And it wasn't her journals. It was like a calendar, a daily calendar. And a lot of the times it was just like she wrote, dropped bread off to the neighbor, or the next day it was like took Otto, her husband, to the doctor, and then days would be blank. And, you know, he just saw this calendar, I think he created a poem with it. And it just made me realize that, you know, the historical figure behind these collections are also very human. They're just like us, really. but yeah, so that was just really cool to witness him being very giddy and just coming in every week looking at the day planners.
And you mentioned the Rutherford collection. Could you just say one more time? I think you alluded to it really briefly at the beginning, but can you just speak briefly again about what that is?
Yeah, so it's the Verdell, A. Burdine, and Otto G. Rutherford family collection, and it's about a little over 100 years worth of material that Verdell collected in her home. They were prominent citizens of Northeast Portland, and, you know, they worked within the Black community. They were members of the NAACP, Culture Club, the Elks Club, and they helped write the Oregon Civil Rights Law, the Public Accommodations Law. But she kept everything. And something that's very specific about that is that, you know, I just think, like, she didn't see herself in a lot of the day-to-day media. And when she did, when she saw, you know, her neighbor's names in the newspapers, or she saw someone she knew, she would keep it because she just knew. Like, the internet didn't exist when she was doing this. She didn't know that all these things could be accessed, you know. So she kept every single piece of paper, newspaper that had, you know, her husband's name or, yeah. So it's a very rich collection. I think it's our most used. And I've been working on that collection since day one, and like I said, the responsibility is grand on that one.
I'm sure you get a range of weird and interesting and boring stuff. So what is deemed worth archiving, and is there a system to determine what is archived and what isn't?
Yeah, so that varies with each archive. With Portland State, it has to have like a lot of the times it has to have a Portland State connection or someone within a Portland State alum would bring it in. But that's not the case with like city archives. Like they would just take most of the city materials. What is deemed worth archiving is, I think, a really important question, because I think that gets asked a lot. It's like, well, why is this person's story kept but others aren't? Why is there are certain voices from a particular area but not the same from another one? It's I think those are very important questions to ask, especially in terms of what kind of collections are in the archive. Because now I think with like the Black Lives Matters movement, it really brings to the forefront whose voice are you hearing and whose stories are you hearing and which ones remain. And I think that's a way to look at archives too. It's like, okay, well, here's someone's story in this collection, but who's being left out and why?
I wonder if you've had any interesting collaborations with artists where you're playing the role of historian or archivist and helping an artist produce a project.
I'm really excited to see where this Art and Social Practice Archive kind of flows, because the idea with that is just towards the end, like right before COVID, that was our most used collection, and it was just people wanting to come in and view art and just see what was there. But I would really love to see items from the collection being used by other artists to like work off of. I don't know, I just see there's, when I view the items in the Art and Social Practice Archive, I'm always inspired by the work that artists produce. And that's just on a personal level. It's not as an archivist, but I just feel the voices within that archive are just so current and really trying to say something. And I just feel like if other people came in and used it, it would, you know, it's just a way to connect people together. I don't know if I answered your question, but...
Yeah, I know what I sent in to the archive. I think I sent in some kind of a book, artist book or zine kind of object, but what kind of stuff is in the archive?
In the paper form archive, so there's two aspects to the Art and Social Practice Archive. There's the paper archive, and then there's the digital aspect, which we are in process of working on. So there's a lot of artists that are connected to the program. It's a lot of abolition art. It's heavier topics, but also fun. These artists are creating works that just translate it in a different way, like for people that don't necessarily know what abolition is or what prison reform might be. So there's a lot of that. It's just a lot of like current topics, social justice, and then there's like fun karaoke songs, you know, like
yeah. You get inspired by some of these pieces, maybe not in an art way, but have you ever maybe thought about creating art with the inspiration that you've seen?
Yeah, definitely. That's a question that opens up to vulnerability there, which I'm all for. I write poetry and write songs, and I'm definitely inspired, and it might not be like towards those two creative forms, but it's definitely in my head, and it just has inspired me to look into issues or, you know, do more research on my own. Like mutual aid is a huge thing for me right now. Just like really just seeing some of these materials and just being inspired in certain ways that how I live my life.
I was having a conversation with this artist yesterday who referred to the concept of like the artful life as thinking about our lives as our practice, not just the stuff we make, but like the actions that we do. I think that's such a beautiful concept.
Yes, exactly.
So since the world has currently been in the middle of a pandemic, what has changed about your jobs? Do you still have to go in to work, or are you able to work from home?
Yes, so there's four of us in special collections in university archives. Two of my colleagues, Rhiannon Cates and Carolee Harrison, are going into the archives about once a week to answer patron emails and scan things that they request. We want to have that connection still. I think towards the beginning of COVID, it was more like, well, how can we do this? I think everyone was asking that. I took the first part of COVID and worked specifically on the art and social practice digital aspect, which can be found on PDX Scholar, which is the library's platform that makes PSU faculty, staff, and student work accessible in like PDF format. And so Lo and I we've been working consistently on that, trying to upload art pieces and create biographies. But then I have also brought a collection home. I brought two collections home. They're very small, but I did get the go ahead from my boss to do so. Because, you know, archives, they are temperature, they have, they're in a safe space, they're locked, they're temperature controlled. And so it was kind of like we had to go through the pros and cons list of, well, what is this okay? And the thing with KPSU archive is I can talk to the person that gave it to the library, and I was able to get the okay from her. You know, I can't do that with all the collections because the people are mostly dead. So I also brought home one box, which is the Lesbian, Gay, and Bi Alliance chapter of Portland State that started in the 90s. The responsibility is huge, especially now that they're in my apartment, but they are in a safe space. That's been my second part of COVID. And, you know, I talked with another archivist who works at the University of Washington Labor Archives, Crystal Rogers. And she, since the beginning of COVID, she had brought a collection home. And so, you know, like talking to other archivists, seeing what they're doing, how are they moving forward through these different times. So I'm very happy with the collection here and able to process it while my music is blasting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sort of a more silly question. Have you ever had like an oh no moment while like taking care of something? Maybe you don't have to say anything if it might get you know, fired, but.
In trouble. Yeah, who's listening? I don't know what an oh no moment would be. I guess like something that I couldn't find right away, even though I know it exists. Because when you take out an archive box and there's like 50 folders in it, and all the folders are filled with like microfiche paper because it's a copy of a copy. And you're like trying to find it, you know it's there, you panic because you think it might be lost, although you know it's not because it doesn't go out of the room. So it's just kind of like spur of the moments like that. I think it could also be like that one person or patron didn't hear you say no drinks, and they have like a drink next to these historical documents, and you're like, oh.
That's kind of amazing that you never had like a coffee spill or something like that.
Nope.
Incredible.
I know. At least not with me. I don't know about my... No, I would have heard about it. I really would have heard about that.
Not on Marty's watch.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you.
I wanted to just... You mentioned Lo, who... I know you mean Lo Moran.
Yeah. Lo... So I've been working specifically with Lo since I started working on the art and social practice archive. They would come in once a week and drop off materials to be housed in the paper archive. And I really enjoyed discussing with them what they were bringing in. And it was my job to write descriptions for each piece. So they would talk about the pieces and I would write it down. So then that would be going on to the finding aid. And like I said, how the work within that collection is really inspiring, because it's the way that even Lowe's energy regarding it, their dedication towards the project, it's just a cool like professional relationship that we have that's really inspiring to me.
There are lots of types of archivists. Is there a type of archive that you would love to work on?
That's a really good question.
And you don't need to have like any like special training in it. You could just like magically have like the requirements to take that job.
Well, the dream was always to work on your favorite band's catalog and tour notes and photographs. I mean, that's like, I dream about that a lot. Like, you know, some of my favorite bands, I'm a 90s child, so yeah, I would love to like see the inside scoops of like why they wrote this song, or, you know, what was that tour fight about? you know, just the personal behind the songs that inspired me and saved me. Yeah, I think that would definitely be my dream.
mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, before we forget, is there anything that you would like to plug, whether it's the PSU website or something personal to you?
Well, I know that with Lo and I working on the Art and Social Practice Digital Archive, you can find that at PDX Scholar, and that website is pdxscholar.library.pdx.edu. And that's, you know, that's up and coming, that's in progress, but